2 years ago, Portland lost a musical and cultural icon with the passing of Ghanaian master drummer, bandleader, and teacher Obo Adi. His contribution to the raising of local knowledge and appreciation of African music in general, and Ghanaian music in particular, and his tireless work with local youth cannot be overstated. As part of our fall membership drive, KABU is proud to present a celebration and retrospective of Obo's work on Thursday, October 2nd, from 1 until 4 p.m. Musical offerings, remembrances, and interviews will be part of this important figure's legacy. Join Andy Hosh and DJ Charlie and others at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 2nd. The preceding hour, from noon until 1 p.m., will be filled with Ghanaian music as part of DJ Charlie's regular World Beat Connection time slot. See you then.
All that coming to you from KBOO Portland, where the time is about 10:01. Stay tuned at 10:15 for Flashpoints, a report on the cross-country train headed for the Global People's Climate Rally in New York this weekend. Also, activist Harvey Wasserman on the next step in climate change action, and an interview with a psychotherapist and Lyme disease activist on dealing with the illness. At 11 o'clock on Between the Covers, we hear an interview with Tasmanian writer Richard Flanagan about his latest novel, The Narrow Road to the Deep North, which takes place in 1943 in a Japanese POW camp on the Thai-Burma Death Railway. And at 11:30, host Jean Bradley speaks with Doris Kearns Goodwin about her new book, or about her book, The Bully Pulpit, Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, and the Golden Age of Journalism. And we're going to get ready to go to Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in today.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, September 18th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. These are the days of drum beats of war, and we are told that there aren't going to be any boots on the ground. Well, there's already plenty of boots on the ground, and it isn't so much the boots, it's the armaments that they carry. The region is awash in every form of ordnance that it's possible to imagine, and some that are pretty risky in many ways, pretty experimental. It's essentially an open-air arms fair, and we ought to be very watchful of what happens in the region with regard to what goes where. They say that there aren't going to be American weapons used in this conflict, but of course American weapons are already there, and they are very much in use right now, even as we speak. We know these things because of people like Edward Snowden, people like Julian Assange, who, of course, his name is dropped off the media landscape left, right, and center. It's a typical process in the liberal media to at first embrace the latest darling and then gradually let that name fall away. And the next time it surfaces, it's being besmirched. It just seems to be that the left has a tendency to attack its own that said about Julian Assange, what his work did, of course, give rise to a great deal of the rest of what has happened in recent years. One of the most extraordinary instances of whistleblowers being punished in extraordinary ways was the story of Thomas Drake, which involves William Biddy, which involves Diane Rourke, who is my guest today. She was at the center of this storm, and as a whistleblower, she found herself retiring to a remote part of Oregon to escape the slings and arrows of a very inconvenienced and disgruntled government. This administration does not like whistleblowers. It has been extremely harsh in dealing with whistleblowers. It has patted itself on the back and loudly and vociferously proclaimed how friendly it was to whistleblowers, while at the same time excluding its own government workers from any protections when they step forward. And of course, who else is better placed? Who else is going to step forward if not government workers, and call foul when they see something that is truly foul? So we are very happy to welcome Diane Rourke today. Other headlines that should be touched upon before we get into this is Mark Klein. He is, of course, the former AT&T technician who blew the whistle on the company's cooperation with the NSA to spy on Americans in 2006. Klein has written that he supports a letter calling on Congress to reject the latest efforts to blow smoke. Senator Leahy's so-called USA Freedom Act. The bill is a fraud, a pretense at reform, which only leaves in place all the main elements of the NSA surveillance program. Of course, Senator Dianne Feinstein's alternative is even worse. Dianne Feinstein, indeed, a disgrace to the Democratic Party. The bill tinkers around the edges of the phone call records collection and leaves completely intact the meat of the whole issue, which is the vast unconstitutional dragnet collection of internet data. Mark Klein was central to exposing this. That said, Edward Snowden's appearance by live stream in the Auckland Town Hall recently, just I believe last night with the time difference, perhaps it was the night before. In any case, this week was remarkable. It had nothing to do with Kim.com's spurious claims about a Hollywood plot. The dodgy Warner Brothers email is as relevant to the New Zealand Snowden files as John Key's declassified documents. The timing of Glenn Greenwald's reporting is pertinent only to the spin which National is pushing. Snowden says New Zealand had access to X-KeyScore, the data harvesting program at the center of the global spying scandal, which his whistleblowing sparked last year. And not only that, but the Government Communications Security Bureau contributed to the development and the expansion of the program itself. It gets more and more convoluted. It goes deeper and deeper. We would never know any of this stuff if it were not for whistleblowers like William Biddy, Diane Rourke. The list gets longer and longer, and the disgraceful way in which the government has treated these people. These should be honored citizens. These should be the heroes of our time, and history indeed will recognize them as heroes of this particular era. This is what a program is about today, as we are deafened by the drumbeat of war once again. That thundering sound in the background isn't boots on the ground. It's the thunder of machine gun fire and, of course, cannon. I hope we have Diane Rourke ready to talk. Good morning, Diane, and many, many thanks for joining us today. We respect your privacy and respect what you've done, and you've withdrew yourself basically from the whole D.C. Circuit because of the way you were treated. Just to refresh listeners' memory on this subject because surveillance is back in the news, as it always should be. And surveillance and war, of course, go hand in hand. You simply cannot have war without an elaborate surveillance program. And elaborate surveillance programs are always inevitably used to justify war. Which is odd, but true, I think. In any case, could you bring us up to speed, remind listeners of what happened to you, William Benny, Thomas Drake, when you tried to keep the government honest?
The five of us were raided in late July of 2007, they were led, I believe the government was led to the remaining four, which also included Ed Loomis and Kirk Wiebe, because of me, because I had objected internally within the House Intelligence Committee and to various administration people about the program after I found out about it. And because I had objected strongly, I became for a primary target, and then I led their investigation of me led them to the other people, and those I am quite sure that the government was using its domestic surveillance to monitor all of us. Tom Drake subsequently was they set us up with false charges, both Tom and I. They tried to say I had perjured myself in a voluntary interview with them, and they claimed that Tom had five classified documents in his home, even though they were not marked classified. And it turns out the government had subsequently retroactively classified them, and even though they were not, by the classification rules, classifiable. And their case eventually fell apart when this was revealed, but it was after Tom had expended all of his funds and was forced to resort to public defenders, who in this case turned out to be very competent, and secured his release.
So in these times that we currently find ourselves, and again, and I stress this, I say this on every program pretty much, is we are still living under the USA Patriot Act, which legislators now continue to write legislation to talk about surveillance and how it should be carried out and whether it's lawful or not. All of this stuff. None of these people have ever read the USA Patriot Act. And the word homeland, protecting the homeland, all of this business is drumbeat of war in the name of protecting the homeland. It's a pretty scary word. Some of the nomenclature that's being tossed around in such a cavalier manner should give people pause. I want to ask you again about when did you begin to, because you were, this was early on in this surveillance business, and probably a lot of people weren't aware that this was going on. So in addition to what the work that you were doing, you blew the whistle on, you basically it as well inadvertently blew the whistle on the surveillance programs, which is what really probably pissed them off. How does the retroactive classification of documents as confidential or whatever, how does that work? And when did you realize that something funny was going on? When did you have a feeling that maybe your work was being watched or followed?
Well, I found out about the surveillance program in February of 2002, and I was already scheduled to retire, which I did in April of 2002. So I only had a couple of months while I was in the office, although I continued lobbying members for some time afterward. We were also resented, I should say, because we asked the four of us asked for an inspector general report about waste of money and at NSA, and the fifth one, Tom Drake, had helped the inspector general uncover the evidence, and so we were resented for that also. In fact, since your theme is whistleblowers today, and the administration often says that they can go to the inspectors general if they wish to blow a whistle, we deliberately went to the DOD inspector general because the NSA inspector general was not independent.
And that is at the crux of the matter. We're out of time. I'd like to have you back again soon, or perhaps record something and put it on the website. Not as a live interview, but as a little bit more lengthy and in-depth examination of your story, because it is very, very pertinent to what is going on right now, really terrifyingly so. My guest has been Diane Rourke, central to the one of the early firestorms around surveillance and whistleblowing and government misconduct at very high levels and some deep ones as well. This has been Cascadia for Thursday, September 18th, 2014. Tammy Dean engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
John Coltrane. Every September, KBOO Community Radio celebrates the birthday of John Coltrane with an all-night marathon honoring Coltrane's life, his legacy, his influence on musicians around the world, but mostly his music. Tune into KBOO this